Blog Talk Radio.
This is the UR Tennis Network. We are the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate tennis enthusiasts who promote our sport relentlessly. We strive continuously to bring news and information for players, parents, coaches, officials, businesses, and anyone else who loves tennis. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis may not be interested in them.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Creasy! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And good morning. This is Coach Chuck Creasy in another week of American Tennis. And I am very proud to be back in College Park at home base here. And we have a wonderful show for you today. If you hang on, I've got to get through a few of the basic introductions here. But again, this is American Tennis. We are on the UR Tennis Network. That's UR Tennis Network. And listen to the other shows if you can. You can get it on your iPhone just by punching on the iTunes button, and you can scroll down and get every show that there is. Also, if you go to my web at chuckcreasy.net, my son has done a masterful job at putting every one of my shows up, and you can get every back show. We had, remember, March November 21st, we had Mats Wielander on there. We had some great shows with Dave Fish introducing the universal scoring system. We've had some professional players on. Dennis Kudla has been on there. Dennis Rawlson's been on there. So go back and Kathleen Horvath, many, many other great shows. We even had a show with my great redneck coaching friend down there in South Carolina, Chuck Waldron, and comparing the styles of coaching against New York, Richard Reyes, and I've got my boss here with me laughing a little bit. I've got him on here in a second, Mr. Vesapunka, that's the UR Tennis Network, chuckcreasy.net. Also look at the T3 Mentorship Program if you haven't looked at it, t3mentorship.com. Our web here is jtcc.com, if you want to see what we're doing in College Park. Calling in today, you can call in at 714-583-6853. That's 714-583-6853. And now that I have all that out of the way, I wanted to say that, again, our mission with American Tennis is to do everything and anything that we can to help America get back on top again, like we were at one time throughout the history a lot of times. But in the 80s, we actually had 42 players in the top 100 in the world from the United States. 39 of those had gone to college. And, I don't know if we're ever going to have that again, but we have 75 players in the top 1,000 on the men's side. We have 93 women in the top 1,000. Listen, we need you to stand up, to speak out. It's the deal that I always say every week. It's the Edmund Burke quote that all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men or good people to do nothing. And it doesn't mean that, you know, anybody's evil out there, but daggone it, if you believe and you're passionate about American tennis, speak up. We have a new leadership in there, Dave Haggerty, and I think the coaches are doing a great job, Jose Higueras, and, you know, Clemson's own Jay Berger and Kent Kinnear, and they really are listening to everybody, but speak out. And all you have to do is stay professional, address issues, not people. You can say anything you want then, and people will not find blame. My little oration this morning, though, I've got a little bone to pick here, and then I'm going to go to commercial. We'll have our guest on. But I wanted to make a statement right out. The tennis and sports, we've got the Super Bowl weekend this weekend, but tennis and sports are a capitalistic game. They are not socialistic. They are a capitalistic game. As our government and everything we're doing in our school systems and everything are dumbing down the kids to where there's no losers. Everybody's a winner, and we give participation trophies to everybody. I find great, great refuge, but also great hope for our country and everything in that tennis. If you win, you win. If you lose, you lose. And there's not much to talk about. We always tell our children that 80% of the people usually don't care if you're having a problem. The other 20% are glad that you are. But, you know, what you work for is what you get in sports. But I got a quick story to tell you that, you know, beside the two or three stories my wife once told me about when she was in elementary school, how they stopped allowing the teachers even giving ribbons out for relay races and their spring games and things. They don't want anybody to feel bad. What in the world is that? And then my wife upset because our kids go to karate and they come home with these huge trophies and they're only beginners about 6 weeks into karate and haven't attained a skill yet. She went back to the teacher and told them, we do not want participation trophies. It sends the wrong message. But I was talking to a college coach this week, and he's having a very hard time getting his players over the hump. And in the old days, we used to be able to just point the way and say, look, there is the wall, go climb it. There is the moat, go swim it. This is the obstacle you have to overcome. Go after it. Well, nowadays, kids size everything up, and they basically are after comfort much more than they are after excellence. So anyhow, my friend, I asked him, I said, well, where are your players from? And he's got a couple from England. I said, well, that explains some things, you know. And then he's got a couple Canadians and a couple. And it's not that they're getting bad training. The fact is, he said that from very, very first start when they're in elementary school, they do this collaborative education. All of them sit together in their school. They don't even allow kids to sit individual desks anymore, try to fight things out and be the best in something, you know. And this, we don't really even look at this, but our kids are being dumbed down from the start, and let's not underestimate our kids. Let's speak to the king and to the queen and all young boys and all young girls and expect them to be the best they can, and don't be afraid of the competition. They will grow into it. Not everybody. I mean, I talk every day to the kids how I was the biggest wimp around early in my childhood, and you just have to learn to dive in and dive in until you can get it going. But anyhow, that's my little thing about not dumbing down. And we're not going to get any dumbed down today. We have a wonderful guest, my boss and the man who started the Junior Champion Center here in College Park, along with three other individuals. And I'm very, very proud of a couple of the Clemson guys have been here from the start and working hard. But this man, Mr. Vesapunka. I'll read his achievements when we get right back. Let me get on with this commercial, and we'll be right back with American Tennis. And this is Coach Chuck Creasy.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions-focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
My golly, I'm starting to love all that music, but most of his songs, patriotic, is fantastic. But this is Chuck Creasy of the American Tennis Game. We're trying to talk about Made in America. One of the people that does it better than anybody else for the past 13 years is Vesa Ponca here at the Junior Champion Center in College Park, Maryland. And I believe we have hit the tipping point here. People are talking around the country, and recently at the Eddie Herr and the Orange Bowl, and actually the Easter Bowl was okay, but we really, really stepped up. 13 kids there. We had 10 make round of 16, and you know, it's really, really fun to see. We've got three new national champions here, two new national champions, and 27 national champions. Vesa, you've been pretty much responsible for training here. Former number one player in the world. It was interesting a few years ago, just two short years ago, Frank Salazar was on the show earlier, earlier this season, but we had Dennis Kudla, Mitchell Frank, Junior, Beatrice Capra, all of those trained here from the time that they were 8 years old, except Mitchell. Got to give Vin Doe a great lot of credit over there in the Virginia side of D.C. for the work that he has done with Mitchell, too. But And on, the 2011, rightfully so, United States Olympic National Coach of the Year. And what I want to talk about more than anything, and you know, as I've gotten a little bit older, I'd rather people just say, look, he does his job well, because everybody can sort of write a nice pedigreed resume up. Everybody's got fancy resumes. Even with the kids, we tell them write handwritten letters now, because you got to stand out, because it's so easy to sort of pedigree up your resume. But this is fantastic stuff, because it's working with other people's lives. Literally hundreds and hundreds of people have been touched by your work, Vesa. And I wanted to say, first of all, the reason I love working here, I've never had handcuffs on me. I've had great direction, and I've screwed up a few times. But bottom line on the thing is I'm able to work, do my work, and put my heart into it. I have ownership, and but there's great structure as well. So, anyhow, Vesa, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you very much.
And, you know, and one of the things we'll talk about, Vesa is a Finn now, you know, and one of the things I've been outspoken, Vesa, about talking about college players coming from other countries into the United States and, you know, taking over a lot of the spots that USA players can do it. But you, this is what happened with you, right? You came to the United States from Finland, right?
Yes, in the mid-'80s, by the way, First of all, thank you very much for having me on the show.
And it's also, taken a year. Yeah. It took me a year to get up the guts to get you in here.
Also, I want to make clear that I am not Chuck's boss. We are colleagues. We work together. And that's how it works here in JTCC. So, you know, I just wanted to put that one out there.
Well, I'm fine. I'm fine either way. You know that.
But I came here to USA in mid-80s. Tried to play a pro in Europe for 4 or 5 years and never made a big money. So I said to myself that I need an education, and came to the Tennessee. Didn't know anything about the state or the school. Was the first school that contacted me, and the second school actually was Dennis Ralston SMU. The day after, I didn't know that SMU was that time number one in the country. It didn't make a difference to me when I was in Europe. So I made my commitment to Tennessee at Martin, so I end up there and had a great 4 years. I got my undergraduate and MBA, and we had a excellent tennis team. We did have all six starting lineup players were from foreigners, and five out of the six we had all played Davis Cup for their countries, and I think that our average age was maybe 24.
That's really
but those were those wild days in mid-80s.
Yeah, those days in the mid-80s, that was back in the days where, you know, it was just opening up and people were coming to the U.S. And I want to say, first of all, as I mentioned this morning, without Harry Hopman, I would have never been in tennis. I need to tell that story some days, but for $20, I would have been teaching high school math and maybe high school basketball coach somewhere in Indiana. But for $20... turning down $20, Mr. Hopman was going to give me. He was just testing me to see if I wanted the money, and I didn't give it back. But he gave me a job, and I went to work. And, you know, he was from Australia, and you were from Finland. And so many of the great, Jose Higueras is doing great. You know, he's given so much. And you can go on Dennis Vandermeer from South Africa. And always, I want to make this point that we have never, ever been for international players coming to the United States, contributing and giving to the American system and making things better. Your wife is from Tennessee.
It worked out really well. I, in a finance class in Tennessee, I picked up the best looking girl, and I have been happily married for 22 years now from Tennessee. So it has given me a lot, and, you know, I'm more than happy.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, as we know, Brian Parrott and myself and Dennis Ralston and Luke Jensen and Wayne Bryant, we're all on this committee, and we're trying to get things under control a little bit. And as 65% of our players, 60% of our players, I believe, are all international students now, and we got to get some kind of handle on that. But in this case, that's who you've been here all these years, and you've contributed to American tennis tremendously. But I read most of those things, but talk to me about JTCC's start. Why was it started? How was it started? And then, of course, ask about the philosophy a little bit.
I'm a very old school. You know, I was coached by Nicky Pilitz in Germany. It was very old school. And I'm, you know, come from the very tough background. You know, my parents didn't have a lot of money, or actually no money to put into my tennis. So when we started at JTCC, it was a very humble start. We had our owner who was very wealthy but wanted to start a very, very modest way. And, you know, Jason Rayner from Clemson, one of your players, and when we started it, we had nothing. We had no tennis center. We had no courts. We recruited a couple of players, and then we had three vans, and we loaded up the first winter around 8 o'clock at night, loaded up players around the Washington, D.C., and drove them about 60 minutes to the countryside. There was a bubble there, and we had a court time from 9 to 12.
Wow.
And, you know, we trained the players there, and it was a very humble start. And I liked it because it sent a great message to not only to our coaches but our players that it's not the facilities, it's not all the fancy stuff, it's the people behind the, you know, the effort and the work. And that was our first year, and then our great facility here was built, and we started to grow, and I like to think that we did a lot of things right. We have done all the mistakes that you can do, but you know, I think that we have learned. And but that was our start. It was very humble start, and I think that it really worked out well.
Again, Ms. Ken Brody, and he was the nucleus there, and
Absolutely. And
then you, Jason Rayner, and Frank Salazar came very quickly afterwards, and there were a few other. Who were the other two?
Russell Lightfoot and Dana Evans.
They all were together. But what did parents? They must have thought you were crazy. We're going to load your kids up at 8 o'clock, go train 9 to 12. Get back about 1 a.m. in the morning, then go to school the next day.
Absolutely. You know, they all went to the normal school. We didn't have a twice-a-day training that time. And I think that first summer, when we started in the summer, I think that we did a good job with our training. And that was when we were selling our training methods and how we are thinking and our mindset. And then that all in the winter, it was easier. We already built up a trust. Hey, these guys are working hard and they have the best interest of the kids in heart. So it was much easier for the parents to take that leap of faith. So, you know, you like everything else in life, you have to earn your trust and respect. You cannot go there and just, you know, demand it. You have to earn it. And I like to think that we earned it that first summer. You know, we carried our own water coolers to the course and we just had simply nothing. But we worked hard.
And that whole first generation, number one in the world, came out of there. And Philip Simmons and then several players went to Virginia and several college players. Taka, who went to Vanderbilt. The girl went to North Carolina. Several just great
success. We had a very great first generation from a small section, Mid-Atlantic. You mentioned Philip Simmons started it. You know, with me when he was 11 and then came to JPC at 12. And Fred Huey, who is now one of the top doubles players
right.
in the world, was here. We had a great player from Peru, Juan Carlos Rebeza, who was number one in whole South America. Jason Pinsky was number one in the country. I mean, we had a great young group, and we worked them hard. We had a great group of girls. And we have always been a big believers of the environment. That, you know, when you are training, if you have people around you who have the same mindset and are working hard, it's much easier to get to that next level.
Well, I believe we have all 120 kids pretty much understanding that mindset. Maybe they don't all love that mindset yet, but they are moving. It's not like we have to convince kids to, and I hate the word buy-in or something, you know, you do it or you don't do it. But basically, the pedigree doesn't do it. Flash doesn't do it. Facility doesn't do it. It's nice to have those things. However, it's the work. And how do you put it? You must earn your respect. You must earn your trust.
Yeah.
And that's bottom line on the thing. And think of the people we have. I always say there's nothing more pathetic than small people in big positions. Most of the time, small people in big positions have not earned trust nor respect. And liking, I knew from being a classroom teacher, I had an old teacher help me one time, and my father was a teacher. He used to say, doesn't matter at first if they like you, they must respect the work, and then trust comes. It's the same thing, and then people will work for you. I need to ask you two quick stories. Every day, folks, I get to listen to these great stories, but I want to hear the two stories, one about you playing in your barn in sub-zero weather when you were growing up in Finland. But
I grew up on the countryside in Finland, about 15 miles from the town, and you know, my father is a farmer, and I did all the farming since the day I learned how to walk, and you know, I got hooked up on tennis. I cannot remember how I did all the sports, but tennis just hit the right kind of nerve, I guess, and
you were a ski jumper, too.
In Finland, everybody jumps, so I was a ski jumper and hockey player. But tennis got me somehow when I was about 10 and 11. And, you know, we didn't have money or chances to go to indoor. In Finland, the winters are about 6-7 months long. So I built my own training center in the barn, the hitting wall. And you know, it was, now when I look back, it was great, you know, when it was, if it was warmer than minus 10 Celsius, I could play without gloves. And when it was colder than minus 10 Celsius, then I have to have gloves on. But, you know, you learn the value of every ball when you hit in situations like that.
Yeah, that's really, really a great, great story. And you also, you went on to be a top player in Finland, then got to go to Germany and train with Nicky Pillaj. Now, do you mind telling the story about what Nicky Pillaj did with you if you had balls in the net?
Sure.
Unforced errors in the net.
Yeah, Nicky Pillaj has been very successful, was top five player in singles himself, was one of the handsome eights in 60s, and then has been extremely, extremely successful coach. Has won a Davis Cup with three different countries. It has never been done before. But I was very lucky that he took me under his wings, and he's one of the toughest human beings that I have ever met. And I learned a lot from Nicky, what to do, and then sometimes I learned what not to do. So it was learning every day. And he was a man of the very few words. And I remember in the springtime in Europe, you know, we were training for the clay court season. And, you know, we were on the red clay. And that time, you know, it was in the early 80s, you know, we still had a wooden rackets. And you just simply couldn't hit a neutral ground stroke to the net. Or second serve return to the net. It was like a crime. But he wasn't a screamer, so, you know, we had a deal that when we were training that he just walked around and, you know, if the player hit a neutral ball to the net, he just walked by you and had a little plastic spoon in his pocket and then he gave it to you and you just ate a spoonful of red clay. So, you know, very, very quickly you learn how to...
Give him his balls in the net.
You learn how to clear the net. And unfortunately, I cannot do it here now because I would get fired the very next moment or I would get sued. So the times have changed, but we try to have same kind of messages here in JTCC, but the methods are a little bit different. But I still remember how the red clay tastes, and I ate my share of red clay. And I had my gallbladder removed 2 years ago. And the doctor said that it was full of something that he doesn't even know what it is. So, you know, maybe I need to sue Nicky Phillips now.
Oh, man. But we all know these stories from growing up in those days, back in the 50s, 60s, 70s. I mean, I'm a little bit older there, but... Anyhow, we will be right back. We've got to go do a commercial. But, again, this is American Tennis. The number is 714-583-6853. Call in and get to talk to Vesapanta. This is some wonderful stuff being shared today for all you people who love American tennis out there.
This is Jason Haynes, the UR Tennis Network's Chief Executive Officer. Over the last 14 months, we have undergone a lot of changes here at the UR Tennis Network, and the Nike Tennis Camps have been one of our strongest supporters. They have had a very successful 2012 summer camp season and now are planning for 2013. We would like to thank them for allowing us to be an advertising avenue for their tennis camps. As we leave the summer, we want to encourage you to check out www.ussportcamps.com and start planning your next Nike camp experience. They have locations all over the U.S. for both adults and juniors. The Nike camps are offered in other sports such as golf, volleyball, soccer, swimming, softball, running, water polo, lacrosse, and field hockey. We want to encourage you to consider the Nike camp experience for your tennis needs. These camps are run by successful tennis coaches and offer a fun camp involvement where you learn new skills and make new friends. Be sure to check them out at www.ussportcamps.com or call them at 1-800-NIKE-CAMP and take your game to the next level.
Chuck Creasy, I'm back with American Tennis, and again, Vesapanta is here, and some great insights, and absolutely, one of the best managers of people I've ever seen. Motivation has is unique to, I think, to each and every one of us, and we all try as coaches to motivate people in different ways. Some people try the the authoritarian approach or things, and others try to be buddies and friends, and others try to do whatever is their personality. But in the end, people have to not just be compliant, they've got to be locked in, committed, and then inspired, and we hope it becomes the love of their life, and then things get a lot easier in coaching. We're here at the JTCC, Junior Tennis Champion Center in College Park, Maryland. The CEO here is Mr. Ray Benton, and one of the things that's been great is that he has been able to provide the resources and the management and the leadership and the vision that we've needed to not just to grow, but to go to a wonderful, wonderful level where kids are inspired and they give their hearts each day. And if you're not giving your heart, it's not that you're forced to. I think great coaches lead people to things, don't push, they lead more. And
I think I agree. I'm not against pushing, but I'm all against pulling. So a little push in my mind is not bad. A little kick to the behind, sometimes down here, a little push. But if you have to pull people to train, I think that it's a losing battle.
What makes the JTCC, Vesa, from your standpoint? You have the whole history. I mean, I have my impression from the time I've been here. But what makes it so unique to what's going on with academy training? First of all, you don't like the word academy.
No, I do not like the word academy. I don't think that tennis needs to be a high institute, this and that, and everything is nowadays high performance. It's such an in word.
That's the coin phrase, the pedigree phrase.
Yeah. Yep. There's either good training or bad training. Really good is not good enough. So I would like to think that you keep things very simple. And you have to get into the players' heads. It starts from inside out. And as the teachers and the coaches, we not only need to motivate, but we have to learn how to inspire young people. And that's one of the requirements to the coaches to work in our team here, as you know, is that, you cannot be here if you cannot inspire young people. And you inspire these youngsters with your actions, with your mindset, what you say, what you do. But that is a big thing that I really feel that is extremely important.
Yeah, the inspiring part, and again, you said it's inside out. It's their heart, their head, their minds, and it has to come from them. And that's where we, I think, are missing the boat as the kids are becoming one-dimensional. The cell phones, they're looking at cell phones all day. They're looking at the computers. They're reactive. I always say there's five levels of relationships: cliches, facts, opinions, feelings, needs. Each one of those are deeper. Cliches are like, what's going on? Not much. How are you today? Hey, dude, like this. Facts are like, hey, did you know that Georgia won this? Or hey, did you know his forehand looked good? And then an opinion is deeper than that. And this is where we break down. And we need opinions in the United States of America. We need people to stand up and speak out. But everybody's so afraid of hurting somebody else's feelings that nobody ever says what they think. So we're creating all these shallow people and shallow children. And if you talk about issues, they always said that big people talk about issues, small people talk about other people. And that's exactly right. If we talk about issues, we can move on. Opinions, then feelings, then needs. We can go to the needs of what is needed. Well, you've created a situation here, you and Frank and all the people who have been here, that people do get down to the nitty-gritty. Nobody cares what you know unless they know that you care. But I think it comes from that people know that you care. And this academy deal, kids are great at pacing themselves, aren't they? You can tell kids that if they've been to so many lessons, that they know how to give 70% or 80% in their crews, but it's pretty good. I don't think our kids are doing that here. I mean,
We are getting much better. In the early days, we had to change the culture, and we did. And like you said, we have to create right kind of urgency with the coaches and with the young players. The young players need to understand that they have the freedom to learn and have a plenty of time, but they don't have any time to waste. And that is important message that the coaches have to get across. And when you get to that point, now you have young players who have an urgency and they are eager to learn. I have a theory that there are no burnouts if young players are learning. I don't think that the burnouts are a result of playing twice a day or 25 hours a week. You can burn out 3 hours a week if you are not learning. You can train 24 hours a week, but if you are learning, I don't think that you burn out. The kids are wired that way. If they are learning, they want to keep on learning.
That's a big point, and I think as educators out there and as coaches, this burnout phrase, that's a nice coin phrase. It's nice, but I don't think you've ever burned out on coaching. I've never burned out on teaching or coaching. And I don't think players who, that's sort of a nice disclaimer phrase, and that's a bunch of bunk. And years ago I used to, I don't want to give myself a disclaimer, but I used to think that that was something. But let's move on. Talk about the mentoring program here. This is a very unique program, and I think other programs in the USTA are starting it now. What is the mentoring, whole mentoring program? How do we do it, and what is the...
We started in a very humble background. We had nothing, and I remember being in the townhouse floor in the Jason Rayner's apartment and talking about what is the one common thing with all the top players, and we came up with an idea that they all had a very strong driving force behind them, mostly parents or some teachers. So even when JTCC was even running, we decided that we are creating a very strong mentoring program. So every player has a driving force behind them. And first, of course, it was traditional player to the, coach to the player mentoring. But then it started to evolve. And like you have put a name into it, the three-tier mentoring. So it started to come from coach to coach, and then coach to the player, and then player to the player. And I think that that is the one thing that we got it right, and we are improving it. And I think that if there's a one so-called secret that we have done right, I think that this mentoring has been a thing that has really turned the corner and made a big difference. One thing about the mentoring, it's not a system, and we don't have a system in JTCC. I think that in the United States, many, many times there's a mistake that coaches or training centers, they are trying to ask the players and the parents, especially the players, to believe in their system.
In a system.
Instead of, it has to be that the coach has to believe in the player. It has to be another way around.
Right.
And then you can get something done. But in so many times I see that there are these great systems, and then we are trying to get players to believe in the system. And then in that system, there are a lot of coaches who don't believe in the players. And then you have nothing. It's just a lip service. So here in JTCC, we make sure that the coaches believe in the players, because when the players get that feeling, and they have a freedom to fail, and when they have a freedom to fail, now they can try different things, and when they can try different things, now they can learn and improve. So that is a big thing that we are trying to do with our mentoring. It's much better to fail and make some mistakes. At least you are doing something, and then we are trying to mentor them through those mistakes, and that's how we try to approach it.
There's two very good statements, is that all errors should be aggressive errors, even with what you're trying. That's number one, and that's a capitalist mentality. I don't want to go into politics. You know how I am about my politics. But number one, that. But the other two is that we would rather give forgiveness and permission on a lot of things. If kids wait around to do things right. It's not about always just doing things right. It's doing right things. And then you go after the right things. You try to take the hill and you stumble and fall. You get up and try again. You get up and try again. And we are training in our society. I'm scared to death that we are training a lot of kids that if at first you don't succeed, they try something else or they change a channel. It's not try again. But we've absolutely got to get back to that. One of the things you brought up about the coach and the freedom to fail is beautiful because, you know, you got to collect your failures if you're going to be good at anything. Your mind does not learn, and for you coaches out there, you do not learn by doing things perfectly. You learn by messing up and messing up and messing up, and then your mind will seek out that one thing that turns the light on, and it's like a child learning to walk. It's not like the child gets up and we teach them perfect steps and all that. They stumble and fall, fall on their rear end, fall on their head, stumble and fall, then eventually they've got it, and it's their unique walk. Everybody, all 6 billion people on this planet have a little bit different swagger to their walk. Nobody is cookie cutter, and that's the way, daggone it, the tennis players are too. Every stroke, it's funny how as a coach you sit around, you can go behind a curtain sometime and see the strokes, not know who the person is, but you know who they are from their unique strokes. I got to throw this stuff in, but many years ago, my mother used to say, Vesa, that it doesn't matter what kind of knowledge you have to give someone, and it doesn't matter what their great capacity to learn, you need a bridge. If you don't have that bridge, it doesn't matter. You could be Einstein and they could be Mozart, and it doesn't work. And then the analogy that I use often with young teachers or young coaches is that you've got all this knowledge you want to give, but you're like Mozart trying to play your best concerto. And by the way, the talent is this beautiful Stradivarius. It's $1.5 million, this violin case that's the best ever. And this is the talent of the athlete. And you're playing your best concerto as Mozart, but nothing happens unless you have that little piece of balsa wood that conforms to, not conforms, but not, I'm not saying, you know what you understand. Yeah. It plays against that box and it receives those reverberations. So the point is the bridge in teaching. And we never thought that our society would be so, I don't want to say dumb, we're not supposed to say that, non-informed, non-inspired, uneducated, not knowing the difference between a diamond or a rhinestone. We don't know what is successful, what is not, what is quality, what is not, what is a diamond, what is a rhinestone, because we have too much information, like drinking water out of a fire hose. USA Tennis, we've got about 15 minutes here left, and I'm going to shift now to United States of America Tennis, and I was in a wonderful meeting here with you and one of the USTA representatives thanking them for coming here and listening to what we had to say. But you said that it's not necessarily the 10 and unders. You think we're losing the players at 15, 16, and 17. Is that the way you put it? And I don't want to – I thought that was very interesting.
I really believe so. I think that the private sector, the coach, I think that we have done a decent job with the very young ones in a sense. I think that the most difficult part of this game in my mind is jump from the juniors to the pros. I mean, that is like a Grand Canyon, and we need help. And I think that that is something that we need to be able to provide players the resources to go out there and lose for a couple of years. Because the fact here is it doesn't matter how good you are at that age, you are going to lose on a daily basis when you go to this low-level program.
Okay, give a perfect scenario. We have a 14-year-old coming up. We have the number one player in the country right now, 14-year-old, coming up, Evan Zhu, and it's exciting. We have a couple others that are coming up. What's the perfect scenario?
I believe again that you have to establish yourself first instead of jumping somewhere that you haven't earned it. So yes, you have to become one of the top players in the country before you can start to, hey, I'm going to travel now overseas all the time. But what I think that is important that somebody who gets about 15, 16, maybe 16 years old, that they play, of course, all the U.S. championships, because you have to measure yourself against your peers.
That's where the pressure is, with the peers.
Then you need international experience, because the tennis is such a global sport. It doesn't matter how well you play on here in College Park in the court 17, middle of nowhere. You have to learn how to play in front of people and the places that you have never even heard about. So you have to be able to get this player, hopefully with a good team, to get international experience. Then you have to have resources to make sure it's a long-term plan. It will take 2 to 3 years before anything great will happen. And the players have to have a knowledge that there are demands that they have to work extremely hard. But the deal cannot be off if they lose the first 7 tournaments.
We give good short-range plans, you're saying, but we do not give a good long-range plan. So explain 15 through 18, how that should line up.
I think that player, in perfect world, would play the U.S. championships, would play maybe 6, 7 ITF, but then would play 10 to 14 futures. Be out there with the young pros from different countries and have team traveling with a good coach, which will cost a lot of money. And that's why I think that we need a lot of help from USTA. And
they do a good job there with the top kids, yeah.
But the main thing is that it has to be a long-term approach. It cannot throw in the towel after first summer.
And one of those things is that we gear towards college too soon in this country. But let me real quick take a caller here. We have a caller, 510-909-3666. Are you there, caller?
Yes. Would you like to talk? Oh, yeah. My comment was about the USTA program that provided coaching at just about every level, satellite, you know, ITF, Challenger, and the USTA had provided coaching at every level, so there would be a coach available for players coming through, and that program has been dismantled. And that, I believe that happened in 2002. Is that something that should be rebuilt?
I believe so, that there needs to be a long-term planning and consistency. You know, players will fire coaches. That's the name of the game. We all prefer them to be good enough to fire us. But the young players, they need consistency, and they need that, hopefully, the teacher and the mentor who will guide them through these tough losses and everything. So I feel very strongly that we need to get strong teams with the strong coaches out there competing against the best ones and have a long-term plan.
And not bail out on the kids if they lose for a season or...
Yes.
We got to believe in the kids long-term.
Absolutely. And the one of the criteria needs to be, you know, you can be kicked out, of course, if you don't work hard. I mean, then, you know, you can be kicked out right away. But losing cannot be a criteria in my mind when you are this young. It's about willingness to handle how to lose and how to learn from it.
Caller, anything else?
Yeah, just a little background on this. Apparently, up until about 2002, coaches were available, and maybe the player would arrive at the tournament and not know the coach, but a relationship would quickly be established. But the current state is players go to these tournaments and there's no one there necessarily to support them.
Yeah,
so.
That's just preparing to fail in my mind. And, you know, it sounds good on the paper when the coach is in the tournament, when the players arrive, but I think that you get to know the players in 3 different dimensions. On the practice courts, you know, when you guys are doing the hard work, and then off the court, you know, you get to know the person, and then you learn to know them on the tournament level. So I think that to make it really work, you need to be able to cover training off the court and the tournaments, because that's what the rest of the world is doing. And I think that we don't have a choice.
Thanks, caller.
Thank you.
Again, the phone in number is 714-583-6853 if you'd like to talk to Vesa Panka today or make some comments. And that's the relationship, again, cliches, facts, opinions, feelings, needs. You know, I like to put everything in a can, But we only go cliches and facts. Maybe that's part of our society. I find that I don't, you know, as the years have gone on here, as we've gotten, we've got never had more communication in the history of the world, but we've never had fewer relationships. And coach-player relationships, I know for myself, without the coaches, they were the people I looked up most to in my whole life. I don't think we're getting past the cliches and facts. And then we go to opinion, people get their feelings hurt, they lose trust, they bail out. And we need to do that better. So you're saying that, let's get back to this real quick. You're saying that maybe take the first year of college off. Let's make it a longer-term program.
I feel like you also have to take a safety net a little bit away from the players, meaning that I think that players maybe make a three-year commitment, and the last year of that commitment will be the first year in college. So it means that, you know, let's say that if USD puts the money to the team and a great coach, there will be a three-year commitment, and you don't go right away first year to the college. You may be if and when, because it's so difficult now just to make it, you know, you go maybe for your second year.
And you give up a year of college maybe, because that would be your life. You know, Mark Dixon, who ended up getting 12 in the world, I remember him telling me one time that, you know, he didn't finish his degree, so he had to go back and finish it. He really had a great senior year and it broke out. He says, look, and I said, Mark, if you don't want to stay around another semester and do this, he says, Coach, he says, if I do, then I have that cushion to fall into. Now I've got to go out and make it. And he got to 12 in the world. Then he went back and got his degrees. Now coaching University of Miami with Mario Rincon, the head coach there, is fantastic. But, you know, the point is people in USA, they look like what's plan B, what's plan C. And our kids are bailing out of plan A and they go to plan B and they've got a plan C. And maybe this is the parents that is doing this.
I'm a parent. My daughter is going to college next year, and I you know, education is extremely important, absolutely. But we have to find a way. College tennis and college training could be a great asset in the future, because we all know that you are playing your first tennis nowadays in your mid-20s.
Right.
So college could be great, but we have to find a way to get rid of that safety net mentality, because that is kind of counterproductive at the moment. And I think that one way to look at it is that instead of taking that last year off, maybe you take a first year off and you learn the hardships and the toughness of the satellites and everything, and then you come back to the college and you mature and you get better, and maybe you go back in there when you are 22.
You said the other day, it was really good, you said two things players have to have the stomach for. Could you talk?
Yeah, this is, you know, like I said, my coach and mentor was Nicky Pilitz, and I remember I was 18-year-old when I moved to Munich, Germany, to train with him, and I always remember he asked me early on in the training that, hey, Vesa, tell me what is the most important talent for the young professional tennis player. And I was, of course, thinking, you know, you need to be fast and big forehand and all that. And he said, no. The most important talent for the young pro is to have a stomach for losing. And I'm looking at him that, you old man, what in the world you are talking about? But it is so true. Because it doesn't matter how good you are doing a lot of losing, and you have to have a stomach to keep on working and come through it. And it is extremely important, and it's part of this game. And I feel like we bail out so early. You lose a couple of matches, the coaches and the parents feel like, oh, there's no way. Somebody got to make it. Why not you? That has to be the mentality for the young players. And we bail out very, very quickly. And that's why college, that safety net, can hurt the mentality of the players.
Yeah, that safety net of plan B. So the stomach for losing.
Stomach for losing. And then he asked me, that what is the second most important talent for the young player? And now I'm totally confused now, and I couldn't come up with anything. And then he said, no, you have to have a stomach for traveling. And I'm like, what are you talking about? But again, it's so true. You don't become good on your back woods, on your back court only. You have to go out there. And first year is a lot of fun. Every place is a new one. But then after that one, it starts to get old, and you have to have a stomach for travel. and you have to learn how to travel. So it's a whole package that we have to teach for our young players who are 16, 17, and 18.
Right.
You know, when they have been in college for 4 years sometimes, and, you know, they have had everything catered, you know, they have their meal plans and all that stuff, it's pretty tough to go out there. I prefer them to learn those skills, how to lose and tough it out, and how to travel when maybe they're 16, 17, and 18.
Yeah, and as college has gone with limited playing dates, limited, again, call Randy Blumenthal, guys at Indiana University, listen to him about the system he has that could save college tennis, but we're really not doing a good job training professionals from the college ranks. It's more of a participation deal where people are, you know, happy about being there, and talent's dumbed down, and talent's diluted for many, many reasons. We have to change that, and, you know, but here's why, Vesa, your two things Nikki Pilic said brings me to a very, very important thing that I almost forgot today, but this week we lost one of the greatest men in the history of American tennis. That's Coach Clarence Mabry. Coach Clarence Mabry died this week, and I got a message from, I think Dave Haggerty sent it to every board member and every committee member and things. But Clarence Mabry, my camps for the last 20 years, I have on the front of a booklet that said a quote that Clarence Mabry made in 1980. I was at the National Teachers Conference in 1980, and his question to the audience was, what do you think, somebody said, Coach Mabry, what is the most important quality of a championship tennis player? And everybody was thinking, oh, big forehand, big serve, something like this. He, you know, just sat there for 30 seconds and he says, I absolutely know that it is the hunger of an inquisitive mind. The hunger of an inquisitive mind to ask questions, find out, how do I do this better? What do I go next? Where do I travel? What do I do? And the inquisitive mind, that was a brilliant question, and I put it on all my camp brochures. So I want to call Coach Bobby McKinley, I think, this next week and see if he'll come on the show next week. I'm going to do an honor to Coach Clarence Mabry, NCAA champions, 1972. And if you guys remember, anybody remembers out that team, fantastic. Brian Gottfried, Bobby McKinley, Dick Stockton, Paul Gerken. I mean, I remember the names of most of these guys. Trinity University was always a great, great tennis landmark, and their tradition and their history is unbelievable. And Clarence Mabry and the state of Texas, we mourn now, but we rejoice in the goodness and the posterity of his life, regardless of the prosperity. What a fantastic man. You know, so we lost Clarence Mabry, and I've only... maybe we'll get Bobby McKinley on there next week, folks. I'm going to try to. Well, we got a couple minutes, but I was going to ask you about the green balls, and I know your answer is short with the green balls, but we have 2 minutes. Can you say anything you want to there real quick?
Sure. I think that the green balls or different kind of, I think that they are great coaching tools, period. And that's how we have been thinking here for 15 years. We have used different kind of balls always when we think that how we can get our message across. I don't think that we need to make it more or less. It is a great coaching tool. I think that every coach who is always looking for ways to improve things agrees that it's a great coaching
tool. Well, you know, no mandates. I'll put that in there. Vess is in charge over here, but I'm saying again, please, USTA, you can have your cake and eat it too. Everybody believes in the great tools that they are, but come on, let people, United States of America, this is, and everybody should be able to. Coaches have the freedom to do what they would like to do.
There's a pain in America, born in a hot land, raised up a family, a King James and Uncle Sam. Semper Fi tattooed on his Simpsons song. Spent a little more in the store for a tag in the back of this USA. Won't buy nothing that he can't fix. With WD-40 and a Craftsman wrench, he ain't president. He's just made in America.
reminded that you're in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or a loss. Law of reciprocity is give everything away, and you will get back tenfold. God bless all of you, and we'll see you again next week for American Tennis. Vesa, thank you very much for being
thank
on
you.
The show.
My pleasure.
Okay, keep teaching out there, folks. Let's get America on top again. See you next week.